Hello and welcome back to Goodness Love Alive. Today we're talking to Dr. Will Bulsiewicz, aka the Gut Health MD. We're going to be talking about dietary fiber, prebiotics, probiotics, postbiotics, and what's the deal with lectins? What's the long-term impacts of keto and low FODMAP diets and so much more. You don't want to miss out on this one.
Welcome to the podcast. We are with Dr. Will B.
It's amazing.
Joking. I just wanted to be super cheesy for a bit.
Oh, man. Are we recording? That was fantastic.
We are recording. Maybe we'll keep it.
Dr. Will B.
Let's go.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Dr. Will Bulsiewicz, who has just released his brand new book, Fiber Fueled. It is selling out across the country. Here is Dr. Will B with his brand new baby. How are you feeling?
I'm doing great. I'm so happy that this baby is finally delivered, and I don't have to carry that burden anymore. And life is good.
Yeah, awesome. So I understand that it's is indeed selling out across Amazon and all different places. So here's the cutting news. You can still get it from Barnes & Noble, or best, even better, call your local bookshop. Is that right, Dr. B?
Yeah, I mean, so it's crazy. Yeah, Amazon is sold out, Target is sold out, Walmart is sold out. But if you call your local bookstore, I mean, frankly, you should do this anyway because it's COVID-19. And when you're going to spend a dollar, why not give that dollar to your neighbor who needs it, right? So spend it in your 100%. Local community. Call your local bookshop. If that doesn't work, go to bookshop.org, which supports local bookshops, or Barnes & Noble. That's the other choice.
Excellent. So we're going to dive into lots of exciting things. I've got a list here. It includes, we're going to be talking about controversial things like lectins, the latest science on autoimmune disease, like Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis. We're going to be talking about FODMAPs and how that fits into the whole picture. But first, Dr. B, it would be amiss for my first question not to be about fiber and the love affair that you've begun with fiber over the last few years. Could you tell us a bit about your story and how what started this obsession with fiber?
Oh my gosh. Well, first of all, I appreciate you calling me out, but that's okay. I'm willing to openly acknowledge and publicly say that I think the fiber is sexy. And you may not. But I'm going to try to convince you of that during this podcast today. Okay. So, you know, the deal is this. I am a traditionally trained Western doctor, trained at great institutions, Georgetown, Northwestern, UNC. But when I had my own health issues, 50 pounds overweight, you know, 20 kilos, high blood pressure, anxiety issues, when I had my own problems, my medical training didn't really provide me with a way out of it. And ultimately, what did give me a way out was the discovery of a plant-based diet. And when this happened and the weight started melting away, I started to ask questions like, why had I not been taught this in my medical training? I went to the medical literature and I was absolutely shocked when I found that there were thousands of studies to back up the benefits of a plant-based diet. And so it was so powerful, I became obsessed with it and I studied it and then I brought it into my clinic and I healed thousands of patients, and that compelled me to spread the message. And I started doing things that frankly didn't feel natural to me, like starting an Instagram account. Like I honestly don't really enjoy Instagram, but I felt compelled to share. And so I started that, and then I started podcasting, and now here we are. And my book is finally here. Almost 2 years of work.
Awesome. And you know, obviously it being sold out is just showing, you know, the market is so hungry for this type of information. And what we're curious to dive into right now is, you know, let's just get deeper into this whole fiber equation, because I think people, for example, understand fiber is maybe helpful, you know, like, well, you know, the doctors say increase your veggie intake because your fiber intake is important. But why exactly is it important? What is this part of a grand, what role does fiber have in part of this grand ecosystem within our guts?
Well, you know, I think first of all, we have way oversimplified it. And in a way we have dismissed the power that you will find in fiber. Okay, so let's start here and say that fiber is food for your microbiome. This is what they eat. And they are as alive as the three of us. They are as alive as the listeners at home right now. And they need food. They need energy. The things that we put into our mouth will ultimately go down there. And that's what they'll be forced to eat. But their preferred food, what really energizes them and makes them strong, is fiber. Fiber is found in plants. All plants contain fiber. And it's exclusive to plants. Plants have a monopoly on fiber. So if you want it, there's only one place to get it. Fruits, vegetables, whole grains, seeds, nuts, and legumes. And the relationship between fiber and these microbes is really special. Because it's not just that fiber goes in the mouth and shoots out the other end like a torpedo. It's that fiber is actually their food. They eat it. And then they release what I think is like, I mean, honestly, the biggest thing in all of nutrition that not enough people are talking about. Short chain fatty acids, butyrate, acetate, and propionate. They heal and reverse leaky gut. They optimize the immune system. Gosh, that's kind of important during COVID-19. They actually reverse type 2 diabetes. They lower cholesterol. They have protective effects in the heart. They cross the blood-brain barrier. They have protective effects in the brain. They are incredibly powerful. They are incredibly anti-inflammatory. They do that throughout the entire body. And the way that you get them is when fiber meets microbe and this love affair takes place in your gut. Not to be too graphic.
So, okay, let's dive into this metaphor of the love affair, because I think metaphors are good for people to understand this stuff, right? So we have fiber entering the love affair. Who is it? Who's its first friend? Or, you know, who's the first date that it has inside your gut? Because I've heard there's some interesting, I guess, you know, speed dating that's going on there with fiber inside the gut.
Well, so fiber is what's special about fiber. And this is, by the way, also true of resistant starch. When you hear people talk about resistant starch, this is also true of that. It passes through the small intestine completely untouched. We as humans lack the enzymes to break down fiber. There's these enzymes, not to be too nerdy, but I think you guys know me. I am, so I can't help that. There's these enzymes called glycoside hydrolases. Well, us big, strong humans only have 17 of them. And a single cellular microbe that is invisible to the human eye, that could be on the tip of my finger right now and you wouldn't see it without a microscope, could have hundreds of these enzymes. And when they look at the microbiome as a complete unit, this complete unit where its purpose is to break down and digest our food, including our dietary fiber, the microbiome has 60,000 of these enzymes. Humans, 17. Microbes that we can't even see, 60,000 of these enzymes designed to break down and process. And when they break down and process, that's when we get the benefits. These short-chain fatty acids, these are the next big thing. You know, people are talking about probiotics. Okay, that's cool. They're kind of, that's like 3 years ago. 2020 is a little bit the year of the prebiotic. You're starting to see these really emerge and come out in a big way. But let's talk next level. Let's talk in a way where it's like, guys, I'm about to give you something where it's like, 6 months from now, your friends are going to be like, oh my gosh, you were talking about that before anyone else knew about it. It's like finding a band before the album came out. Okay. Postbiotics. Postbiotics are the healing molecules that you get from the production of short chain fatty acids by the microbes. Okay. Short chain fatty acids are the postbiotics. So, if we're looking for an analogy, Matt, here's what I would say. It's like this. Imagine going to this wonderful restaurant with a world-class chef, all right? And they got the best locally sourced ingredients. Now, in this restaurant, the chef is the probiotic, and the ingredients are the prebiotics. But at the end of the day, you're not there to look at the ingredients, and you're not there to shake hands with the chef. You're there to eat a meal. And the postbiotics are the meal that the chef prepares when you give the chef the right ingredients. Prebiotics plus probiotics produce the postbiotic short chain fatty acids. This is the money. This is where it's at. And this is what is so critically important for people to understand, because we are living in a world where we're not getting enough fiber. And that's like having a restaurant where the chef is starving and there's no ingredients for the chef to cook with. Gosh, that doesn't sound like a great place to go to have a meal, does it?
Well said. I love the analogies. Thanks, you guys. So can you tell me more about what these short chain fatty acids do for us? I know that they are fantastic immediately within the gut, say repairing gut lining and all that sort of good stuff. But what about in the body as a whole?
All right. So if it's okay to start in the gut.
Yeah.
If you're asking the question, like I think a lot of the people who are going to be listening to this podcast are people that are into gut health, and they're probably into gut health for a good reason. Like, for example, they have had digestive issues themselves. And they want to know, how do you reverse leaky gut, Dr. B? That's a question. And the answer is, boom, right here, short-chain fatty acids. Okay? So when a person has leaky gut, what's happening inside the colon on a cellular level is that the lining of the colon has been busted open, almost like there's holes, because these things, they're like spot welds called tight junctions. They get broken down. All right. If you want to heal up leaky gut and close up these holes, you have to repair the tight junctions. And in order to do that, you got to suppress the inflammatory bacteria and get more good guys in the game. The good guys need to get in there. So short-chain fatty acids repair tight junctions, directly suppress the inflammatory bacteria, and enhance the growth of the good guys, the anti-inflammatory microbes. On all levels, this is the solution to leaky gut. And it's no surprise that leaky gut is so prevalent if you're just not going to have short-chain fatty acids. They're also the food for our colonocytes. So, you know, are the cells that line our colon, they need energy. All cells need energy. And the nutrition that the cells that line our colon require is butyrate, which is one of the short-chain fatty acids. If you want a healthy colon, you need butyrate. And it's no coincidence that low butyrate levels are associated with the development of colon cancer. With the opposite also being true, that when you get more short-chain fatty acids, you actually directly inhibit colon cancer. It's been shown that they directly inhibit colon cancer. So from a colonic perspective, just right there, like immediately, boom, right there, short-chain fatty acids are produced, healing the wall of the colon, getting rid of the bad guys, getting more good guys in the game, getting rid of colon cancer. All good stuff. But then you got to start looking at what's happening in other places. So, you know, you asked like, so what are they doing in other parts of the body? Okay, let's go to the most distal part of the body. Let's go way far away from the colon, other end. Let's go to the brain. Now, the brain has a protective barrier around it. It's called the blood-brain barrier. It's meant to keep stuff out. But the blood-brain barrier is kind of like the lining of the colon. It can break down. It can fail. And guess what? When it breaks down and fails, it's almost conceptually the same thing. It's tight junctions, again. And there are these people who come to their doctor and they say, I'm having brain fog, right? And there's like every day in America, there are thousands of people that go to their doctor and say, I'm having brain fog. And yet somehow doctors don't believe that that exists. How is that possible that thousands of people could say that, right? And you don't think it exists. What it is leaky brain. It's leaky brain. It's the same thing as leaky gut, except it's involving the blood-brain barrier. The tight junctions have once again broken down. We once again need to repair the tight junctions. And guess what? Short-chain fatty acids, butyrate, once again can do that. They can fix the blood-brain barrier. They cross into the brain. They affect our memory. They affect our mood. And think about Alzheimer's, like this epidemic that we have. I mean, I'll be honest with you. That is like my biggest fear. My personal biggest fear is Alzheimer's. And the pharmaceutical industry, like I can't even imagine how much money they would spend to get a drug that would prevent Alzheimer's. I'm sure they would spend over $1 billion to get that drug. And while they screw around with their pharmacologic development, I want you guys to know right now that it already exists. butyrate crosses the blood-brain barrier and prevents the development of beta amyloid plaques, which is the way that Alzheimer's develops. You already have a way to protect your brain from aging and developing Alzheimer's by simply eating plants that contain fiber.
So good. And I've got some so many questions, but starting with butyrate and this whole colon cancer thing, because when we spoke to the CSIRO in Australia who have researched the microbiome for the last 20 years, they had an interesting, I guess, correlation in the sense that although it appeared that fiber rates, our intake of fiber had increased over the last 50 years, colon cancer had increased. And they postulated that it was something to do with these lack of resistant starches that was reaching the microbiome. Can you explain to us more about why that could be happening? Why could we have an increase in colon cancer, but a lowered, I guess, in our daily dietary intake, a lowered intake of resistant starches? And why are resistant starches important?
Well, resistant starches you will find in, they kind of come in interesting places. So for example, white potatoes, believe it or not, are a great source of resistant starches. And you'll also find them in whole grains and legumes. And what we've seen in the last, 50 years is a diminished consumption of those particular foods, whole grains and legumes. You know, it's interesting how we, and I know we're going to talk about this more, how we blame beans for all of our modern epidemics, and yet we're eating 25% less than our parents' generation did. It's hard for me to really wrap my mind around why that would suddenly be this big problem. So the point being that our diet has changed. And, you know, to say, Matt, that we're eating more fiber these days, if that's true, then that means that our parents' generation is the lowest generation of fiber in human history. Because I'm convinced that we're the lowest generation of fiber in human history. And that's because we were raised from the 80s on eating processed foods that are completely devoid of fiber. And it's no coincidence that the average person in the US and in Australia is getting between 13 and 18 grams of fiber per day, where a woman should be getting at least 25 and a man 38. And we should also not just be getting fiber. Like, fiber is not just fiber. It's important to recognize that fiber should be coming from a wide variety of plant sources. That's the most important thing with the microbiome. It's not just grams of fiber. Look, you could take 100 grams of a supplement, and that's not adequately going to take care of your gut microbiome, because what actually makes your gut microbiome thrive, and this is scientifically validated, is the diversity of plants in your diet. This is the most important thing. A broad, diverse diet of plants, different types of plants, creates a diverse microbiome of all the different species. And that is a resilient microbiome that is completely designed with all 60,000 enzymes and with all the tools that it needs in order to be able to protect you.
Okay, very interesting. I now want to talk about beans, because beans is obviously, as you've suggested, a bit of a gut bug favorite. But a lot of people avoid eating beans, as you said, because, and I want to postulate that that's potentially because of gas and bloating, or because they're concerned about the lectin content. Could you speak to those topics, please?
Well, let's start with the gas and bloating first, which is that foods that contain high levels of fiber or FODMAPs, which are the fermentable parts of our food, are going to produce more gas and bloating. When your gut is adapted to those foods, you become increasingly efficient at dealing with them. In other words, your digestion is better and you produce less gas. Not everyone produces the same amount of gas from the same food. So, like, for me, I can go and have a salad with like five different types of beans, and because I'm used to eating that way, I feel totally fine. But if you took me, 10 years ago, where I was not eating this way, and I tried to literally add one big scoop of one bean, I would feel super bloated, and I might have abdominal pain and cramps, and I would be miserable. And so the key is that the gut and the microbiome need to be adapted to your diet so that they're able to take this large bolus of fiber and FODMAPs that comes with beans or with whole grains. But the FODMAPs, I want people to understand, FODMAPs, they would be so easy to vilify. I won't be surprised if certain authors come out with a book saying that FODMAPs are killing us, right? It's so easy to vilify them because they cause gas. but actually they're prebiotic. The reason why they cause gas is because they're prebiotic. This is food for the microbiome. This actually makes your microbiome stronger. You just need to take the right amount and not overdo it all at once. When you do too much all at once, that's when you cause too much gas and you hurt yourself. When it comes to lectins, you know, this is not a new idea. Like, I want people to understand that. Like, it's amazing how it turned into this big book when this is an old idea that's been floating around the fringe literature in medicine for 40 years, like since before I was born. And the idea is based on lab studies where, you know, they'll take like a test tube and they'll throw some crazy concentration of lectins into a test tube with some human cells that are not obviously like a real human. It's just like in a test tube, and you shake it up and you see what happens. And you're like, oh, look at this. Look what happened. Right. So those types of studies, laboratory studies, they can inform ideas, but every single time they should be verified with real human studies. You have to ask the question, if lectins are the problem, then what happens when people eat beans? Do they get sick and die? No, they live longer with less heart disease and with less cancer. Do they have damage to their gut? When they eat beans? No, the evidence is that their gut actually gets stronger and that you reduce intestinal permeability. How about gluten-containing foods like wheat? Do people have increased intestinal permeability when they consume wheat? No, when they actually study real humans, you don't see that. You don't see that because they're actually beneficial. They're actually good for the microbiome. So the point is that the parts of our food that are hard for us to process and digest, it's not inflammation. It's not inflammation that you're experiencing. It's sloppy digestion because you ate more of those fiber and FODMAPs than your gut was capable of processing. And it may be because you have a damaged gut and it needs to be repaired.
Excellent. Well said. I think it reminds us of a certain episode we had on our Gut Solution series that we call it not eating for two, eating for trillions. And so I'm just wondering, is this part of a new paradigm shift of not just thinking about your body, but thinking about the trillions of other friends that we have in our microbiome, and how can we target them in the most effective way? And so if we just get practical with that concept, what are some ideas that you have to, you know, to target the trillions of others that we need to feed as well within our microbiome?
Well, Matt, we did this naturally. You know, we didn't have to engineer a healthy gut microbiome back in the day. We lived, right? We lived, and we lived to survive. And you think about millions of years of human evolution, and there was no supermarket, and there was no stable food supply, and there was no organized agriculture, and you lived off the land, and you were in random ecosystems scattered around the world. And whatever ecosystem you found yourself in, you had to eat based upon what was available to you. And it was famine. You know, you were far more likely to die of starvation than you were obesity and having a heart attack. Okay, that's the world that we lived in. And when we look at populations of people who live that way today, they naturally consume more than 100 grams of fiber per day. And they naturally consume a wide variety of plants. That's just the way that they eat. Like if you look at the Hadza, who are in Tanzania, they eat 600 varieties of plants in a year. 600 varieties. Not every plant every day. There's a seasonal variability to it. But the point is they live off the land, and the land is diverse. There are hundreds of thousands of plants that are edible on our planet. And if you were to live off the land, that's the way that you would naturally eat. But now here we are, and we have society. We have supermarkets. We have organized agriculture. We have, you know, increasingly it's a big farm. It's not the family-run farm anymore. It's the big farm systems. They're opting for a limited number of crops. The crops are high yield, right? So essentially what we see is the diversity that exists within our diet as we have become more organized into society. The diversity has been eroding away. And so Matt, the point is this, that if we want to take care of our gut microbiome in 2020, we have to engineer it. We can't wait for our food system to do it for us. Diversity of plants in the diet will not naturally happen if you just eat the way that the food system wants you to. If you want a healthy gut microbiome, you have to be conscious. of the critical pieces that feed into that. And that, to me, is what my book is about. I'm turning on the light bulb so that when you go to the supermarket, you're not just passively walking through. You're a conscious customer, and you know what you need to foster the trillions, you know, to take care of the trillions so that they can take care of you.
Awesome. Thanks. So what do you think about diets that are popular at the moment? I know the carnivore diet is getting traction, paleo, I guess, and there's different types of paleo. So I can't really put everyone that's paleo in the same bucket, but or the ketogenic diet. What do you think about these emerging diets and their impact on the microbiome?
All studies where we look at the impact of dietary restriction on the gut microbiome have consistently yielded the same result. They've never shown benefit to dietary restriction. They've always shown that you cause harm to the gut microbiome by reducing the diversity of plants in your diet. We see that with the low FODMAP diet, where people go permanently low FODMAP and never reintroduce. We see that with gluten-free diets. And we see there are studies looking at specific components such as the elimination of whole grains or the elimination of legumes and beans. So the point from my perspective is that it's impossible for me to believe that these are healthy choices in terms of the gut microbiome. Now, is it superior to eliminate processed foods? 100%. Like, I completely agree with that. I actually think the paleo diet could be a very healthy diet if you would just bring beans and grains back in. And by grains, I mean whole grains. I actually think it would be a very healthy diet if you were to do that. The ketogenic diet by itself is a high-fat, low-carb diet. Fiber is a carb. There are certain categories of plant foods that are eliminated, like fruit, that are eliminated on a ketogenic diet. And you can't achieve ketosis if you're going to go and do that. And the question is this, with regard to ketogenic diet and paleo. What is the diet that will enhance longevity? What is the diet that will reduce your risk of heart disease? What is the diet that will reduce your risk of cancer? Those are the questions. And the studies are consistently showing that it is a high carb when it is real food. It is a high carb plant-based diet that enhances longevity, that reduces your risk of heart disease, that reduces your risk of cancer. My concern with these diets, paleo and keto, is, again, number one, you eliminate processed food, you're going to find some benefits because you just improved your diet on that level, period. No matter what you do, even if it's a carnivore diet, you're going to see some short-term benefit because you get rid of the processed food. But my concern is long-term. The number one risk of death is heart disease. And on a high-fat ketogenic diet or on a carnivore diet, you are exposing your risk even more. I would be shocked if you maintained a carnivore diet and lived past age 60, frankly, being totally serious. And you're destroying your gut in the process because you're eliminating fiber. Now, there was a study by Justin Sonnenberg, which, by the way, one of the things I'm really proud of with my book is that Justin Sonnenberg actually has endorsed and supported my book. Nice. He's a microbiome researcher at Stanford. Okay. He's actually done a lot of the studies on the Hadza in Tanzania, but he also did this lab study that I find to be fascinating. And I want to show people this because I think it's so important when you think about doing something like, for example, a carnivore diet, which is zero fiber. Okay. In this study, he took mice and he looked at, could there be generational losses of diversity in the microbiome? What that means is that could you lose microbes from grandma passing on to mom and from mom passing on to you? So imagine grandma has 1,000 species and by the time she has mom, she's down to 700 species. And then when mom has you, she's down to 400 species. She's down to 400 species. So you only inherit 400 and you're at a loss of 60% relative to grandma. What Sonnenberg showed in these mice is that if you keep mice on a low fiber diet, they will have a loss of diversity that it goes on over generations. It's reversible if you reintroduce fiber, but if you never reintroduce the fiber, they lose diversity, and at some point, they never get it back. So the point is that Sonnenberg has demonstrated that over the course of time, going low fiber is causing serious harm to your gut microbiome. And at some point you will cross a line where you just can't get it back.
Mm. Wow. So for those of us listening that have been like, okay, I want to incorporate fiber back into my diet, but I have been low FODMAP or I've been keto and I know my stomach, I look 8 months pregnant when I eat a couple of things with garlic in it. What would you recommend for these people easing into it? I know you said it before, but could you break it down into what that would actually look like in a meal?
Well, so what you need to do is you need to slowly reintroduce these foods, and it may require you to work with a registered dietitian if you have a very severely injured gut. Because the reality is this, you know, it's like if I hurt my shoulder, I have to rehab my shoulder. Okay. Now I'm a medical doctor, but like, I don't really know how to rehab my shoulder. I could read about it on the internet and pretend that I figure it out. I still don't really know. I would go to a physical therapist. That's what a physical therapist does for a living. They would have expertise and experience with that particular scenario, and they would guide me through it. And I think that's true when a person has a damaged gut. When you have a damaged gut and you're trying to reintroduce these foods, it's like rehab. And you have to acknowledge that there's going to be some discomfort with that. And working through that discomfort is ultimately going to lead you to a stronger place from a gut perspective. And you may also need the assistance of someone else to get there.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. And I was curious from reading from your book that you mentioned something about the increasing rate of autoimmune disease in industrialized nations.
Yeah.
What is this connection here between the microbiome and this rate of increase of autoimmune disease?
70% of the immune system lives in the gut. And right there, like just that single layer of cells that is so thin that you can't even see it with the naked eye. On one side, 70% of your immune system, and on the other side, 38, 39 trillion microbes. And they're in constant communication, talking to each other. The job of the microbiome is to train the immune system. We rely on the microbiome to do that. When you disrupt the microbiome, you disrupt the immune system. From my perspective, whether we're talking about autoimmune disease or COVID-19, and by the way, I'm happy to talk more about autoimmune disease if you like, but whether we're talking about autoimmune disease or COVID-19, the important point is this. You guys need to know there is a direct line between the food that you eat, the health of your microbiome, and the health of your immune system. You put junk in the mouth, it's going to give you a junky microbiome, and that means a junky immune system. When you put healthy, clean, fiber-rich foods into your mouth, you will feed and nourish and empower a healthy gut microbiome, and that will in turn translate into an empowered, healthy immune system. That's the way it works.
Excellent. So I guess there is some like evolutionary connection there in terms of how our microbiome adapted and gave us immunity or affects our immune system, right? Because our microbiome can adapt faster than our actual human body can. Is that correct?
Our microbiome is going through 50 generations of evolution in one day. 50 generations. So if you compare that to us humans, that would be like us going through the evolution from the pyramids up to modern times in one day. All right, that's how quickly the microbiome can change. But Matt, to your point, what's the deal with this connection? Well, here's the thing. A child is born. Think about this. A child is born, and it's as close as that child will ever be to being sterile in their entire life. The microbiome is a new frontier. It's wide open. It's welcoming all new residents that want to come in and inhabit. And at the same time, the immune system is not yet developed. The immune system develops within those first 2 to 3 years. At the exact same time, the microbiome develops during those first 2 to 3 years. They are evolving together within the child. They are changing. And the microbiome is responsible for training the immune system. And when you disrupt the microbiome of a newborn child, whether it be through cesarean section, bottle feeding, or antibiotics, you also disrupt the immune system. And this is the reason why there's increased risk of allergic and autoimmune diseases, and also, by the way, metabolic diseases like obesity. This is the reason why you see the increased incidence of allergic and autoimmune diseases in children who have had cesarean section birth, bottle fed, or antibiotics before age three because of that relationship between the developing microbiome and the developing immune system. And by the way, just real quick, I want to say for the listeners that you can have a completely healthy child who is born by C-section or not breastfed. I just want you guys to know that, because sometimes people hear this and they like, it sounds so profound that it jolts them. My kids were both born by C-section. They're completely healthy. You can definitely have healthy kids born by C-section. Don't worry.
Okay, great. Thank you. So moving forward, I know that you've said plant-based diet, diversity in that diet. And I've seen your posts on Instagram. Your plates are full of different colors and eating the rainbow, which is awesome. But are prebiotic supplements part of your routine as well?
100% every single day for me personally. I do it myself, and I eat a completely whole food plant-based diet, and I'm thinking about dietary diversity at every meal. And I still take prebiotic supplements because I believe in them. I believe in the science. And I also notice the difference in myself, not to be too graphic. I mean, if you weren't here, man, I could talk about it like it's in a locker room. But I think you guys know what I mean. I think you guys know what I'm referring to, okay? It's glorious. It's glorious. I'll leave it at that, all right? So, but the point is that, just to be clear, prebiotics, you know, we live in a world where most of us are not getting even close to the amount of prebiotic that we need. And I see how critically important this is. I've laid it out in my book for you guys, you know, for everyone to be able to see. And that's, to me, I want more of that. And I'm not running away from stuff. I'm running towards the food that heals.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. So for our friends with constipation, is a prebiotic supplement something that they could also incorporate that would help them?
In some cases, if you have mild constipation, then you can incorporate a prebiotic supplement, increase your water intake, and potentially even, you know, exercise, where even just a little walk after dinner could make a difference. That's mild constipation. I mean, you have to understand, like, I don't take care of mild constipation. By the time a person gets to me, it's almost always someone with moderate or severe constipation, and the simple stuff doesn't work. So in other cases, what I will do is I will combine a prebiotic supplement, because I want to feed the microbiome. I'll combine that with magnesium. Magnesium has a cathartic effect. It'll get things moving. If you can keep things moving through, and you also can feed the microbiome with prebiotics, then you can really help to address constipation and at the same time fix the root cause, which is damage to the gut.
Brilliant.
So good.
You have been amazing, Dr. B. For you, those of you watching, make sure you get a copy of Fiber Fueled. It's selling out across the world. So make sure you jump in and get one while you still can. We've been reading Fiber Fueled and we are loving it. Dr. B, you really have a way of communicating complex things in a really easy to understand way and full of practical advice. It's not all just like concepts and not really practical. It's full of practical goodness. So for those of you watching, don't miss out on that one.
And what's the best way to keep in contact with Dr. B? Obviously, your Instagram's been blowing up. So Instagram, what else? If they want to maybe even work with you or to learn more about the microbiome, what's the best way to go?
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you, Matt. So if you come to Instagram, I'm the Gut Health MD. I'm on Facebook as the same. You can go to my website, which is theplantfedgut.com. I'm launching an online course this summer. I've beta tested it twice. I'm super excited about it. Like, I can't tell you how excited I am, because it allows me to take, you know, I don't know if you guys knew this. I had to cut like 40% of this book out because I had so much to say, and my publisher was like, you can't say all that. Like, that's way too much stuff. So I have an online course that's going to feature a lot of the things that I want to take a deeper dive into. And it's going to be basically going beyond the course for beyond the book for 7 weeks. I've beta tested it twice with amazing results. Okay. Super psyched about it. So that's what I'm really looking forward to. And then I have a bunch of resources at my website that I'm proud of. I have a COVID-19 guide. And then the other thing that I'm really proud of is I believe in complete transparency of science. So whether you buy my book or not, go to my website right now, theplantfedgut.com. You can download my research guide. The research guide includes all 600 references from the book. And I've also written up, like, I feel like we live in this time where everyone's confused because they don't know who to believe. Mm. All right, let me give you the basics of clinical research. And let me show you some of the things to look out for so that you can separate the noise from the truth, because the truth is out there. The problem is that the noise is distracting you. And when you get distracted from the truth, it doesn't bring you closer to being healthy. So let's find the truth in science, because that's ultimately going to be the compass that guides us to better health. And that's what you guys are about too. So, and that's a beautiful thing.
Wonderful. Well, thank you again, Dr. B. We're trying to get Dr. B as a best seller on New York Times. So help him out. If you enjoyed this call, definitely click the link below and order that book today.
100%.
Thanks, guys.